Good afternoon. This is our legislative board meeting. Ms. Cordial, would you be good enough to call the roll, please?
Board Member Durham.
Here.
Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Masnek is unable to attend.
Excused.
Board Member McClellan.
Here.
Board Member Rankin.
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder.
Here. So we are planning to go over five bills, and I'd like to turn this over to Ms. Mello. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to make sure, can the folks on the phone hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, so the first bill we have today is House Bill 1160. The title is Kindergarten through Third Grade English Learner Reading Assessment Language. The bill has bipartisan sponsorship. It is Representative Millie Hamner and Representative Jim Wilson in the House, Senator Rhonda Fields and Senator Kevin Priola in the Senate. There is a split recommendation coming to you all from the legislative contacts on this bill. Board Member Goff recommends a monitor position. Board Member Durham recommends an opposed position. What the bill does, essentially, is to say that, about a year ago, the State Board adopted a policy that said that in the READ Act, that every student had to be tested at least once a year in English. So that was a policy you all adopted as a board. This bill is in direct response to that policy, I will tell you. And what it says is that the school district gets to decide whether students are assessed in Spanish or English. It does allow a parent to come in and ask for an English version of the test, but essentially the school district gets the choice. So that's the essence of the bill. I'm obviously happy to talk about it or answer any other questions I can. I will say it is specific to Spanish because my understanding is that is the only READ assessment language available right now. There is a component of the bill that says if you all approve, let's say, Chinese, that then it would kick in for that population as well.
May I speak?
Yes, go ahead.
So one of the issues here is that I don't think these representatives really understand what's at stake. And it's language. It's reading, and that's what it says here. But really, it's language. So if the district does not give that test in English, reading in English will not really be taught. So we need to give this, we need to give it in English. You know, I think that parents in this bill are ancillary. They will be told. But if a parent wants their child to have their education in English, then this is not discussed in this bill, but we do know that taking a test in a language that is other than English, kind of almost makes that student go to another language. And in if you look at the, I'm a little upset that this has come up again. In fact, I had to go over to the legislative and give a deposition last year because, you know, we got it so wrong. And so I think that oftentimes parents think that the right thing is being done by their kids and they're being taught in English. And they don't know that oftentimes because of three questions that are asked, does another language other than English, is another language other than English spoken in the home? If the kids say yes, then usually the school makes a decision to put those kids in only Spanish-speaking kids. This is not about Eritrean kids, Ethiopian kids who speak other languages, but only Spanish. And if you look, again, I'll come back to the research, that you have, the data that you guys have, that we have in the department, it shows that it's only Latino kids that stray further behind than any other language other than English that is spoken. So we have to give kids, parents, the right up front. When you give that test other than English, then you should say, would you like your child to be taught in English or in Spanish? Now, if it were dual, what happens in Denver Public Schools is that, yes, they tell them it'll be bilingual, but it's not. It's not dual language. It's usually only in Spanish until maybe the third grade, but then it's too late. If they don't start in the language of the school of that we speak, and that's the academic language of the school, which is usually English, after third grade, if they only have Spanish, and they only teach only in Spanish up till third grade, then most of the kids are lost, because after third grade, they're not given the resources. The resources aren't there after 3 years or so to be able to give English as a second language.
Board Member Forrest, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Would this bill make you more comfortable if there was a provision in here where Spanish-speaking students who are already being tested in Spanish for the READ Act all but one time, if the parents are notified?
Not notified. No, it has to be asked at the very beginning. We're
talking about two different things. You're talking about how they're instructed. This is about determining their capacity to read, and based on the rules that we passed last year, students are being Spanish-speaking students at the discretion of the district and the teacher probably are being tested for the READ Act in Spanish, but once a year we required them to be tested in English. Do you want the parents to be notified or to be asked whether they want that one test to be in English?
No, I think they should be tested in English all along, other than that first.
But that's not what our rules say. That's not what our rules say.
Other than the
Board Member Durham,
or else they're not going to be taught in English if the test is in Spanish.
Board Member Durham.
Yeah, I think. I have talked since our board action. I talked with number of lobbyists who were involved in passing the first READ Act, and I think any contention made by anybody that the intent of the READ Act was anything other than to ensure children could read English is wrong, and I frankly think any policy that somehow says that people are proficient in reading if they can't read English is, I think, wrong. And I think this is a bad bill, and I think we ought to oppose it. And if there's not a majority of the board here to do it today, then I'd like to just request that Jennifer make appointments with me for Senator Grantham and Priola and Hill, and I want to go talk about it, because I think this is a serious departure from the policies the legislature intended originally, and it's bad policy.
And Steve, may I would like to go with you and explain.
I just saw this bill.
And I just read it, and I just cannot believe.
Do we have anyone here who can explain the READ Act? Because we're talking about two different things. There's nothing about this bill that means that children will not learn how to read in English. This is about identifying a disability, unless I am wrong.
You are
Ms. Collinsman, can you
hear
me?
I don't believe people are disabled, because I don't think it has anything to do with disability. The READ Act had everything to do with reading in English.
Steve, we have Ms. Collinsman. Could we listen to Dr. Collinsman? Could we listen to her explanation? Because maybe I have it wrong.
So, Madam Chair, are you saying, like, what does this proposed bill doing with the READ Act? Or are you saying what's in the READ Act as it's...
What is the purpose of the READ Act to begin with? Board Member Durham is suggesting that the purpose was for kids to learn to read English. I would guess he's right.
He is
But the process of testing, it was my understanding, was to identify specific challenges that some students have in learning how to read. Not language acquisition, but learning how to read. Then it didn't make a whole lot of sense to also be testing their proficiency in English. And I thought that was the whole discussion last year.
Okay.
So I need some help.
Thank you for clarifying that. So within the READ Act, and in fact the section of the READ Act that this would be modifying, is about the identification of a significant reading deficiency. So it's identifying the children who are most at risk of not attaining grade level reading.
Can you identify some reading disabilities so that we can...
Yeah, and so this actually created like a whole new category, essentially, of reading problems, if so to speak. So they actually created the term reading deficiency to just indicate, those children who, under CBLA, this would have been the students who remained in the unsatisfactory category on the CSAP for year after year after year. And so the intention here was to identify those kids who are most significantly at risk of not meeting grade level proficiency, to identify them early using a scientifically based
But that's not what
assessment.
The bill does.
No, it does not.
Right, so
the bill just allows the district to test damn near anybody they want in non-English if that's what they choose
to
do.
That's right. And that means that
the board policy said no.
So
I'm trying to get to the purpose of this bill.
Am I wrong about that?
Yes. No.
I mean that's what the bill doesn't say. It's just for kids with deficiencies or learning disabilities. It doesn't specify that, does it?
It's to identify the ones who do have them, Mr. Durham.
Well, just as a point of clarification, this is Jennifer Mello. So the part of the READ Act that this bill is seeking to alter is the part of the READ Act that talks about testing students to identify significant reading deficiencies. So,
thank you. Board member, just a minute.
And the way it's used and the way Denver wants to use it is they want to be able to demonstrate they have more kids that can read than can actually read English. It's strictly an escape for a few school districts in the state who want to be able to claim something that isn't true.
Wow. And that's right.
Board Member McClellan. Just a minute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the chairwoman's point that we're talking about two different things is well taken. From what I'm understanding of the READ Act, what we're trying to measure is whether or not children are coming along at grade level in their ability to read or whether they have a significant deficiency in their reading skill. If you were to test me in Spanish, I wouldn't do very well because I don't speak Spanish. But if you were to test me in my native tongue, which happens to be English, I'll do pretty well because I am literate. So I think that this is a good bill, and I want to voice my support for it. I think it brings us back to a truer interpretation of the purpose of the READ Act. The READ Act is not, to my knowledge, not intended to test whether or not a child has learned to speak English yet, but rather it is intended to help us gauge whether or not a child has a significant reading deficiency. So I'm voicing my support for this bill.
But
Board Member Goff, do you have a comment?
No.
But the point
Board
here
Member
is...
Board Member Rankin,
could you just take turns? Could you please just take turns?
I don't know if Rankin wants to speak. Do you want to speak?
Board Member Rankin, do you have a comment?
I'm listening very carefully, and I understand where we were last year with this, and I have to go on the side of English, too. I oppose this bill.
I oppose this bill, too, and I want to give you the reason why.
And I'll call on you in just a second.
Well, I have my hand up.
Board Member Flores.
How would you, if a child has been reading in English, which many parents would like their kids in Denver and in Adams 14 and in Adams 12, in all these metropolitan areas, which have been, this is where the problem is with the feds. The kids, and it's Hispanic kids, it's Latino kids, who do not learn English because they're not taught English. Parents, most of these parents want their kids to learn English. It doesn't happen with kids that are learning Chinese or kids that are learning Japanese. They come right along. But it's the Latino kids where districts like Denver go to Latin America and hire these teachers who are Spanish-speaking. They're not teachers. Many of them can speak Spanish. Many of them are not trained. They come over for a year or two. It's a lot of work for many of the English-speaking teachers to have to be at a meeting and be translating for these individuals. Some of them are talented, but many of them have not been trained to be teachers. And so they come over, they're cheap, it's cheap labor, they usually pay them a lot less, at least $10,000 less than a teacher starting out. And they do not teach English for 3 years. Now, if it were a bilingual program, which they promise, and they'll say to many parents, well, you're on a waiting list. But the problem is that they have so few actual dual language programs that the child that is Latino stays in these programs for 3 years, and they never get to be taught in English. It's very difficult if you're not being taught to read, you're not being taught in English to be able to weather and be proficient and be sufficiently able to read in English after third grade, because usually the support systems aren't there. So why test a child who speaks in Spanish? And usually these tests are such that when you get to missing three or four, then it cuts off. So there are no longer any questions to answer. So the student basically is not there sitting for 50 minutes or an hour or so frustrated on this on these tests, because the tests in this case are smart enough to know that they're not going to be tested afterwards. The kid is frustrated. So basically what these districts want, they want cheap labor. They don't know that ethically they are never going to get kids, and it's only Latino kids. It's not any other language where you have kids that are so frustrated because they don't have the help in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. And finally, they just leave in high school. And we cannot have that going on. If you test the language,
Board Member Flores,
you will
you
teach
finish?
The language.
Yes, thank you very much. So I do want to correct one item, Board Member Durham. The authors of the bill did come and speak to us last year, and they specifically stated that it was not their intent with the measures. Their intent was to find out if kids were learning how to read. I can assure you that if you gave me a reading proficiency test in Spanish, I would have a reading disability because I don't understand Spanish. That's the whole...
You are correct, but I can tell you the people who worked on the bill have an entirely different recollection than those sponsors, and I have a much greater trust of those people who worked on the bill and what their intent was than I do of the sponsors who made the commentary.
Okay, thank you. So let's call a vote, please.
Would someone like to
voting?
Make a motion?
Oh, yeah.
Make
what,
a motion.
What's the motion?
It can be to...
I think Val, did you make a motion?
I make a motion to not support the bill.
To oppose the bill?
To oppose the bill.
Okay. Is there a second out there?
I'll second it.
Okay. Board
member. Wait, this is an opposed. This is an opposed, correct?
That is
yes,
correct.
Yes, it is.
Then I'll second it. This is Joy.
Okay. Board member Durham. To oppose House Bill 1160.
I'd like a minute to explain my vote. I'm going to vote no. I will presume I will be on the prevailing side, and I will request to be recognized at the conclusion of the vote to give notion of intent to reconsider at the next board meeting, so I vote no.
Wait a minute.
Board Member Durham, the motion is to oppose the bill. So he's saying
right
no.
Now,
oh, okay.
I believe the vote's going to be... I'm voting no, so I'm on the prevailing side, and
okay.
I'm going to request to be, because Ms. Masnick is not here and I presume cannot vote by proxy, I'm going to give notice of intent to reconsider. I'm going to be asked to be recognized at the conclusion of the vote.
Okay. Board Member Flores.
I oppose.
So, vote is yes. Yes, that you oppose the bill.
Yes, I oppose the bill.
Board Member Goff.
No.
Board Member Masnek is excused. Board Member McClellan.
No.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes, I oppose the bill.
And Board Member Schroeder.
No.
Okay, so Madam Chair,
yes.
I just wanted to be clear, since we had yeses and noes going in both directions, my vote was against the motion to oppose.
Right.
And that motion...
against the motion to oppose.
That motion passes. Mr. Durham, did you want to make a comment?
Yes,
Madam Chair.
Oh,
I'm sorry, it fails.
Give notice of intent to reconsider this vote, having voted on the prevailing side, and request to be made part of the agenda for the next board meeting.
Sure. Okay. We'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I would like to ask Jennifer to get those appointments set up as soon as possible.
Sure.
And you working with Sally to do that, if you would.
No.
Sure.
No.
And Dr. Flores, if you'd like to join, I'm sure we can work out that schedule.
Thank you.
Okay. The next bill for us to consider is House Bill 1178. This bill is coming simply with a recommendation to discuss, so there is no specific position being recommended for you all. This bill is by Representative Jim Wilson, who is, as you all know, a House member. The first thing I want to note is this bill, everything in this bill would apply to rural school districts. That is an established term within the department. There's already clear existing guidance about what a rural school district is. I don't, of course, know that off the top of my head, but it exists. And I think it's important to note that that encompasses a very large number of districts. And I'm going to look around to my friends over here, and I think it's approximately 120 to 130 districts. They're going to look that up while we keep talking. So what the bill does is say that if one of these districts has advertised for at least a month to hire a teacher, so let's say a math teacher, and they get an insufficient number of qualified applicants, then that school district may declare an emergency by resolution. So the local school board can take a vote to say, we declare this to be an emergency. And then the district may enter into an employment contract with a non-licensed teacher. That non-licensed teacher has to meet qualifications that are established by the school board or the superintendent. That person can continue teaching until they are let go or decide to quit, even if the emergency is gone, right? So that emergency declaration may expire, the person can continue teaching. The school district has to provide appropriate ongoing professional development and support to the person. The definition of that is determined by the school district under the terms of the bill. And they also treat the non-licensed person as if he or she were a licensed teacher in implementing the requirements of the school district's personal performance evaluation system. So in terms of professional evaluation, this person gets treated just like any other teacher. So that is the first part of the bill. There is another significant component of this bill that applies to district waivers. So we've had a waiver conversation, ongoing waiver conversation. And just for context, there's three basic types of waivers, right? There's charter school waivers, innovation waivers, and district waivers. This applies only to that third category of district waivers. And what it does is it allows a rural school district, a group of rural school districts, which I believe is a new idea under this bill, or BOCES.
Board members that are on the phone, if would you mind muting your phones while...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, it was just, it was a, it's a difficulty on the road. It was an emergency there, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, no problem. Thank you.
Okay.
I hope everything's okay.
We're pulling off the road. It's okay now. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
District waivers, a rural school district, a group of rural school districts, or a BOCES can apply to the state board for these district waivers, as they can right now, right? Any school district can come to you all right now and ask for this waiver. For rural school districts or groups of rural school districts under this legislation, you all shall grant those waivers if they meet certain criteria, which include that the applicant will meet the intent of the waive statute, that waiving the statutes and the rules will save time or resources, that waiving the statutes or rules will enhance educational opportunity, and that also gives you the specific authority to set a time limit on that waiver. So two concepts that affect rural school districts, they're kind of different, right? So there's the teacher licensure hiring piece, and then there's the waiver piece. And I would maybe suggest that as you all discussed, perhaps we take those topics separately and maybe start with the discussion of the teacher licensure piece.
Colleagues, comments, questions? Ms. Goff.
Going back to my question the first day I heard of this bill, what is in here that districts cannot already do?
Well, I want to defer to Colleen O'Neill because she's the expert on that. I'm going to pass the mic over to her.
Whoa, you're a little tight on your cord.
Okay, I'll try not to distract. Thank you.
The difference, really, at this point in time, so districts can already hire anyone they want, put them into an alternative preparation program. The difference is that right now, the Colorado Department of Education staff makes a recommendation to the Board of Education. Board of Education approves those designated agencies that provide the alternative educator preparation. From what I can read at this bill right now, the difference really is that there would be no approval process outside of the waivers coming to the board. It would not be a staff review or an accreditation kind of review or reauthorization process, and it would not require a license of any sort. At this point in time, alternative preparation programs are reviewed, and they are represented by the Board of Education and authorized by the board. The alternative licensee, so the educator, does hold a true educator alternative license credential. The difference that I see in this is that there would be no credential. CDE is not involved. The Board of Education is involved in the approval of those waivers.
So there's no monitoring, there's no checking, there's no screening of whatever alternative program they would plan to implement, or actually, I'm going to go a step back because it sounds like there is no criteria necessarily for involvement with an alternative program. So the law would states or and calls for the district to assume the duty of professional development and so on. Would that be part of the waiver replacement plan? Or not? Because otherwise we've just got nobody checking on anything. Or on behalf of the district, how do they know that it's going to be a viable, effective program, whether it's their own professional development or some outside licensing?
So, authority. Board Member Goff, so the district would not need a waiver from the State Board of Education to do this type of hiring practice under the terms of this bill. So that's, it is confusing because they have
what's the waiver for?
Well, so that's just different. That's in general about district waivers and changing some of the criteria and who can apply and the standard for review. So it's not, it's related because it's in the same bill, but really I think they are separate topics. You are right that it would be the State Board of Ed and the Department of Ed would have no role under the terms of this legislation in how those people are trained and what type of program they're trained in. That is left entirely up to the local district mm-hmm. to make those decisions.
Board Member Flores.
Dr. O'Neill, I just wanted to ask you, would the state have anything to do with it? I mean, in other words, the district would be left alone. They wouldn't even have to come to the board as they usually do. And you wouldn't have, meaning your department wouldn't have anything to do with it.
With regard to educator licensing, correct.
And so now, even today, for instance, somehow they'd have to touch base with your department, with the Department of Education in some way, or come to the board to ask for
an emergency license.
Correct.
It seems like as if, I don't know, if there are no bounds here, how would we know if they're doing a good job if they don't come before the department to look at the
I think
at the
right. I think
programs.
I understand your question. And again, under the terms of this legislation, the department and the board have no say in what that training looks like. However, these people are subject to the I always want to call it SB 191. What's our formal? To the educator effectiveness laws in our state. And so they would be evaluated through that process, and those results are available on a statewide basis. So that's the only nexus, I think, to back to any sort of statewide review of performance.
Board Member McClellan.
We have a professional staff here at the department that serves as that safety net, that double check, that review. And I just don't see why we wouldn't want to make full use of our professional staff, whose job it is to oversee these matters and make sure that some minimal standards are being met where these waivers are in place. So I think this places the board in a pretty difficult and awkward position. That really we need our professional staff for, who are trained in teacher effectiveness and in making sure that these professionals are up to the task. So I'm somewhat uncomfortable with this one.
I just wanted to see if there are more comments on this teacher licensure component of the bill, because
right,
we want to talk
about
the other
one, too.
I'm going to
ask my colleagues on the phone. Great. Board Member Rankin, do you have any comments on this bill?
No, I think this is just up for discussion, but I do have some concerns about local control without licensure. I see that as a big concern.
Thank you. Board Member Durham?
Well, I think the bill, I think as Jennifer's going to get to, has a few things that we may be concerned about and a few things that we don't particularly care for, but they have some things we like in the bill, as I recall from the earlier discussion. And I just would like to ask Jennifer, what's the status of the bill?
It is scheduled for a committee hearing in approximately 2 weeks. So it hasn't been heard in committee yet, and I'll confirm that date here in just a second.
So that would be sometime after our next board meeting?
Yeah, I apologize. It's scheduled for a hearing on March 6th.
That's before?
Correct, before your next board meeting.
Okay.
So I'd like to... Oh, go ahead. Are you still speaking, Mr. Durham?
No, that's just...
May I speak? So I'd like to chime in on this one as well. If I'm not mistaken, the state of Colorado and the state board has responsibility over the quality of the teachers in our state. And this means that we are completely severing that responsibility. There's not even anything in this bill that requires a district to tell parents that they are putting unlicensed teachers in their children's classrooms. So I find this actually a very shocking notion. We have something like 50 alternative programs. Am I close?
Wait, we have 50 educator preparation programs as a whole, so about 26 alt.
50 ways to leave your lover.
Yes.
Paul Simon. They're just, as Board Member Goff mentioned, there just isn't a really good reason because there are so many different ways for school districts to bring in what is initially an unlicensed individual, and then with professional development, et cetera, provide them opportunities over a very long period of time. You can have an emergency license for 2 years. You can enter an alternative program. I can't imagine that a district would want someone coming to them who is unlicensed, who doesn't want to get better and approach becoming a real teacher. If they do, then we are just looking for people with a heartbeat, and that would not be very helpful for our kids. We are looking over the next 3 months at some districts where things have not gone well for students. And if we believe the notion that the most important thing for a student is the quality of the teacher, we had better not divorce ourselves from that responsibility. So those are my comments. Board Member Goff?
Ditto. And I know, you know, this may not be time yet to talk details. The mention of notice of a teacher shortage crisis, a minimum of 30 days. Well, I kind of want to, if I'm working in a district, and I actually have lived this life a little bit on the teacher recruitment end of things, I'd like to know when, is there a certain time of the year allocated for that? And would districts think ahead enough? You can't just put out a teacher shortage crisis notice the 1st of August. And that, as far as working within the state context, a lot of teachers across the entire state would be interested in where openings are and so forth. So there'd be some timeline concerns that I would have. And not to repeat, Angelica, but it's just a real mystery to me to think that this state, after so many years and a pretty high reputation of educator quality of the prep programs, which are currently always under consideration for modernization and review and quality checks and monitoring, I'm having a hard time believing that local districts would not be pretty diligent in how they go about this. There's no doubt about that. But I do think the messaging that goes to the public, which is the ultimate audience member here, is when there are no requirements to keep your people up to speed on the quality of their teachers, and then to basically cut off any other benevolent, helpful, interested in productivity and effectiveness agency from having a partnership with them in that is I'll just use the word mysterious as heck to me right now. And I would say that this bill, as written and as introduced, is not in the best interests of Colorado.
So I want to make sure we have a chance to discuss both aspects of the bill.
Did you have more to say?
If there's more to say on the teacher component, let's continue to do that.
Yeah. Board Member Flores. I didn't see
you. I think I agree with you, and I agree with Ms. Goff.
Okay.
On the matters. I think we need to have, we have so many programs out there, and if there is a short, if they can't get anybody,
That does not mean preclude them from finding a person that may not be licensed, but then not continue, you know, getting an education to do better in the classroom. So,
thank you. Are we ready to talk about the waiver part, folks?
Okay.
Yes. It would, okay. Ms. Mel, please.
It would appear that we are. So again, just to refresh, right now, districts can come to you all and ask for what is called district waivers. That's happening right now. The way in which this bill changes that process.
Can BOCES come to us yet?
I don't know. That's a good question.
For waivers?
I'm sorry, I don't have the current law in front of me. This does add BOCES.
I know it does, and I wondered whether...
I will double-check that for us so that we have an answer.
Okay. Please, go ahead.
It's certainly the fact that a group of rural school districts could come to request a waiver is, under my understanding, new. And again, these are waivers related. These are all of the waivable statutes. So the ones you've heard about most recently are READ Act and the... early readiness requirements. So it's not specific to the teacher issues that we were just talking about, right? This is a much broader set of waivers that we're discussing here. So a rural school district, a group of rural school districts, or a BOCES, can come to you all. You shall grant the waivers if they meet certain standards. The standards are a little bit different, I would say, updated from your current process. They're not, in my opinion, dramatically different.
A smidge, but not
much. Right. And then it does give you the specific authority to set a timeline on the duration of that waiver.
Okay. Give me the problem that this bill is trying to solve.
You know, it's difficult for me to answer that question because it's obviously not my bill. My guess is the proponents of this, which are primarily rural school districts, would argue that they need more flexibility than they currently have in these two areas, both in requesting waivers from statutes that can be waived and in hiring teachers.
But I don't know what the problem is they're trying to solve. They want waivers, they come to us for waivers. They come with a replacement plan. So if they come as a group, then we have a group of replacement plans. I mean, there's no example that I can think of, that I know of, that this helps in any way. But if somebody can give me one, I'm open to it.
Dr. Colesman,
please.
So with the kindergarten school readiness assessment waivers that have come forward, there are a number of small rural districts who have kind of talked among themselves about how they have presented their waiver requests and replacement plans with the notion that they would approach this similarly and might want to come together. I'm assuming that they might want to come together and not have to submit individual waiver plans and have to go through that process individually. I think they might have the idea of if we all want to do a similar thing, we might want to come together.
We get one guy to write it all, and then we just copy it. This is sort of like the charter plans we used to get where they'd forget to take out the name of the private one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am deeply troubled about this notion because I fear that if districts just tag along, then they haven't read the replacement plan. They're not committed to the replacement plan because their teachers didn't develop that replacement plan. I trust them to have gone through the process, and if they're not going through the process, it isn't going to happen. Board Member Goff?
Just related, maybe Leanne has this right off the top of her head. Do we have any BOCES that contain districts that are larger than these?
Yes.
That would be...
districts belong to some BOCES, except for a couple.
So this bill doesn't speak to any criteria being that every single district in the BOCES needs to participate or not. So you could have some districts that are not qualified necessarily according to the size limits who would then perhaps be led to assume that they can do the same thing. I mean, you know, I guess in any kind of a waiver application, it would have to be made clear. Maybe that had... when we get, if they get to that point, the waiver criteria would have to outline that in order for me to listen to it differently. But I just think that would be good for the folks to know ahead of time. So,
any other comments from board members? Board Member Durham, Board Member Rankin?
No, I have nothing more to add. It was a good discussion.
So since this is coming up, I think it's kind of important that we take a stand on this. Do you all agree? And could I have a motion, please? Board Member Flores.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to oppose this bill, that we oppose it.
Thanks. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Could you call the vote, please?
Board Member Durham.
I'm sorry. I'm going to need a quick recap of the motion.
The motion is to oppose House Bill 1178.
Okay. Yes.
Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnek is excused. Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
And Board Member Schroeder?
Yes. Thank you, folks.
Okay.
Ms. Mello?
Thank you.
Carry on.
Carrying on, I do think we are actually getting to bills that are at least a little less complicated. I guess we'll see. The next bill to discuss is House Bill 1181. This is being talked about at the state capitol as the compromise testing bill of the session. It has very strong bipartisan support, lots of Democrats and lots of Republicans on this bill. What it would do is continue to require that the state have a ninth grade test for English language arts and math. It requires that that test be aligned to the 10th grade test, which is currently required under state law. That is the essence of the bill. That is what it is attempting to accomplish.
And it's also aligned to ninth grade standards.
That is true. Yes, the bills. Yes, that is true. Any test selected by the board and the department would also have to be aligned to the standards. So that's what it does.
Comments, colleagues? Board Member McClellan.
I think where in my district, I suspect that this will sharply reduce opt-outs, at least at the high school level. I think parents are interested in giving their child the best chance to do as well as possible on college entrance exams. And I think this brings our testing at the high school level, at least, better in line with what parents are friendly to and what they are viewing as relevant and appropriate for their children. So I'm strongly in support of this.
Great. Thank you. Board Member Goff, do you have a comment?
Yeah. I am very supportive of it, but I also think there needs to be some things kept in mind as we go through this. I listened to the full hearing on this. I also listened to the testimony on all of the other ones that didn't make it out of committee. And I think it's going to be important down the road to help people get clarity on a couple of things. One of them is that this is not alluding to any specific exam, and that process rests with us. And tied in with that is the legislative role in state assessments. If I am understanding it correctly, and hope I have been for the past 8 years, is that the legislature's role in all of this is that they are the allocators of the money. So whatever bill the state assessment system presents to the state, the legislature has the role of allocating and approving the funding. It's the role of the state board to make determinations around the system itself. And part of that is pertains to the choice of working the procurement process system as state law says, but that assessments are they're in our purview in that regard. I like this bill because it does make sense, and it does resonate with the people, and frankly, I think we're at a time when we do need to acknowledge that in visible ways, and I think that this bill does that, and I was really pleased. I was pleased by the entire range of the testimony on this bill. I thought it was balanced and smart and well-informed, and I'm hoping we can give our support to it.
Thank you. And in line with your comments, I guess I'll just mention that this has been a discussion at the department. It's not as though they thunked it up over there, but it's okay. It's there. Purview.
I didn't say that.
Right. Board Member Flores.
I don't understand which test they're talking about. Are they talking about a PSAT? Are they talking about a park? What test are they talking about?
Ms. Sierkowski.
Well, I want Joyce to weigh in.
I'll just name it.
Oh.
It doesn't name it because this Department of Education and the State Board selects the test. All it says is that the ninth grade test has to be aligned to the state standards and whatever test is given in 10th grade. But you all, the department, gets to pick the test.
So it has to be aligned with ninth grade to the 10th grade test.
Correct.
And the 10th grade test is PSAT, is PARC.
No, it's PSAT.
No. The 10th grade test currently is PSAT, and this is where I'm definitely going to send the mic over to Joyce.
Okay, so it is a PPP. So you add another P post-test to the SAT? So is it, I thought we were trying to streamline testing. And if it's a practice test for the PSAT so that then they can do well on the SAT, I don't get it. If the legislature said that they wanted to streamline and cut down on testing, why are we having the reason for this test? Is why, Joyce? That's a question that I'd like to ask you. Why the test?
So, they are not adding a brand new test. What they are doing is taking our current ninth grade test, which sits with grades 3 through 8. And they're eliminating the ninth grade from that. So it's just, instead of being 3 through 9, it's 3 through 8. And then what they're talking about is a test that would be given at ninth grade that would be aligned to the 10th grade test, which has to be aligned to our 11th grade college entrance test. They're not specifying a specific test because there is requirements in law that we go through an open and competitive procurement once every 5 years. For that 10th and 11th grade test, and the 9th grade test longer term will be added into that. So what they are thinking, I believe, is that they will get greater student and parent buy-in by having an assessment which is closely tied to the other two high school assessments that Colorado has.
My comment on that would be if many parents already are not taking, do not want their kids to take the other test.
Madam Chair.
So why add a third test?
Board Member Durham.
I apologize. I'm going to have to drop off the call.
See ya.
Madam Chair, can I?
Yes.
Bye-bye.
So I do think that one of the topics that you all have been talking about since last fall is looking at lessons that we could maybe learn based on the 10th grade changes that we made last year. And you may recall that in 2015 in 10th grade, we had participation at about 62%. Last year, when we made the change to the test, that participation jumped to 88%.
Ms. Sierkowski, just a minute, please. Did I read wrong, or did I read somewhere else, that there's a length requirement?
there is not a length requirement.
Okay, so I read it somewhere else.
The department and the board have been having conversations
right,
about...
Right, and we've talked about a much shorter test, which would be a much lighter test, lighter touch on the ninth graders. It would be similar to the high school assessments as opposed to the much longer, deeper assessments.
And I just want to clarify one factual thing. There is a ninth grade test today required by state law in English and math, and under this bill, there would continue to be a ninth grade test required in English and math. So it's not a new test. It's a continuation of an existing test. It's changing what that test has to be benchmarked to a little bit.
And there is the expectation of less time, or am I wrong?
I'm sure many people at the legislature would appreciate that. There's nothing in this particular bill that specifies anything about length of time.
Okay. Board Member McClellan, I know you had to add.
Thank you so much, Madam Chairwoman. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate Board Member Flores' diligence in looking to get down to the detail of the nut. And I'm borrowing a little bit from my municipal experience, and maybe staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but am I correct that you cannot put into law that you're going to purchase testing or require the purchase of testing from a specific vendor, because that would cause us not to be able to go through that necessary legal process of the RFP and the selection process? And I still have follow-up after that.
You may.
Madam Chair,
yes,
historically, Colorado has not specified a specific test within legislation. Yes, I do believe that is in honor of the procurement code. Yeah. And there are a variety of ways to leverage a procurement code, but I don't foresee ever the state at this point specifying a specific test.
Or vendor within
or
the,
a vendor
within the law. Okay,
the law.
So I hope that's helpful. And if this helps from the perspective of the parent of a ninth grader, and the parent of a new college freshman, we've just been through this extravaganza and we're going through it again. I would say, Board Member Flores, for whatever it is worth, my take as a parent is that we're going from a test that is seen as something extra and maybe something that parents aren't feeling is as relevant for them and their children, and maybe are seeing as somewhat of a burden, and taking it into the sphere of something they actually want, because there is some evidence to suggest that practice helps the child do better, and these tests matter to parents who want to make sure that their children have the best shot of doing as well as they can as they prepare for college entrance. So
Madam Chair,
I'm very supportive of this.
Madam?
Yes.
This is Joyce Rankin. I make
Board
a
Member
motion
Rankin.
To support 1181.
Thank you.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Were there any more comments? Would you please call the vote, Ms. Cordial?
Board Member Durham has
escaped
us. Board Member Flores.
Can I ask another question about the test? Is it an achievement test, or is it a test to show that you'll do well in college? Or for a, what's the word, for a technological job, or?
I think the department and the board have a great deal of discretion in answering that question. The only thing the legislation specifies is that the test has to be tied to the academic standards and has to be tied to the other two high school tests. So that is all it requires. The rest of it is left up to the department and the board.
Your vote, ma'am.
No. Oh, yes. I mean, if the test is required, there's no test in place. There's no test in place right now?
No. Madam Chair. Right now, our ninth grade assessment is the CMAS, PARC, ELA, and mathematics assessment. This bill
replaces it.
Replaces.
Yes.
Board Member Masnak is excused. Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Board Member Goff, I am so sorry.
Yes.
And Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Okay. Our last new bill for all of you to consider, we have one bill after this, but it's one you've already talked about before, is a very short bill that simply continues the Education Data Advisory Committee. This is a committee that is in place right now. It is made up primarily of representatives of school districts, and that committee works with the department around data collection issues, what kind of data the department can collect, the manner in which it's going to collect it. I think it's very much designed to give districts a voice in that process. When we discussed this earlier, you know, and staff is here and can certainly speak for themselves, but express the opinion that this had been a valuable process and they would like it to continue. So if this bill fails, not here necessarily, but fails across the street, then we will no longer have that committee. And if this bill passes, that committee will continue.
Read this last night. Does it say that if it's passed and continues, is there any end date on it at all anymore, or is that just ad infinitum?
Doesn't everything have an end date?
Well,
I do not believe this has an end date in it. I think that is an interesting catch because I am not sure that's intended.
You repeal because And then memory test. Does the same thing apply to the Early Childhood Leadership Council extension? Because we did talk about that one as well.
Board Member Goff, it is a similar process. So Colorado, it is common practice in Colorado that when an entity like this is created in statute, that they put a time limit on it. The intent being, you know, they have those, you got to come back to the legislature and decide if it's still relevant or should go on. So we have lots, they're called sunset bills, and we get lots of them every year. The bill that the board has already decided to support around the Early Childhood Learning Commission is an example exactly of that. This bill just is for a different entity, and I failed to say, and I forgive me, that the recommended position on this one is support.
Right.
Board Member Flores.
Thank you. So this committee is already in place. Is that the committee that that has Cherry Creek and Denver and Eagle and, or maybe not Eagle?
Board Member Flores, the committee is certainly in place. I don't know what the membership of it is.
Isn't that committee that meets here?
Yes,
there are a lot of committees.
It's housed here, and we approve the appointments to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So is that it doesn't have an end date? Is that a big problem with the bill? I guess so.
No.
We'll always need data, I think.
So the bill, in terms of the process, is already through the Senate and is over in the House, and that issue did not come up in the Senate hearings.
Comments? Any other comments, folks? Board Member Rankin, do you have a comment?
No, I don't have a comment, but if this is coming up in the House, in committee, they should ask that question. I was just wondering if there was an automatic sunset on this, if the committee's in place. Why haven't we? Why are we going through this now? Right. I mean, why are we if the committee's in place? I'm thinking there may be a recurring.
There was a section that said it would be repealed on July 1st, 2017. So that's what's being changed.
Okay.
Right.
So it initially did have a specific date for a sunset.
And I would say, I mean, I'm happy to communicate back to the legislature about this question of the end date. It is possible, this is a rather difficult bill to read because it's referencing sections of statute that aren't printed in the bill.
Right.
So I think it is possible that it has an end date. I just can't confirm for you as I sit here right now whether it does or not. I'm happy to get more information on that, but just so you know, it's not for sure that there's no end date. I apologize.
Okie doke.
Okay.
Do I have a motion?
That makes sense, Jennifer.
Do I have a motion? The recommendation was for support.
I'll move.
Board Member Goff is moving.
I move that the State Board support Senate Bill 144.
Thank you.
I second it.
Thank you. Ms. Cordial, would you call the vote, please?
Board Member Durham is absent. Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnick is excused. They're both excused. Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
And Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Okay, all thank right. you. The last thing for your consideration is House Bill 1082. The title of this bill is concerning clarification that financial assistance under the Building Excellent Schools Today Act, also known as the BEST Act, includes technology grants. The board was opposed to this bill as it was introduced. I communicated that information to the sponsor of the bill.
Do you remember why we opposed it?
I do, and great minds think alike. The two main reasons you all gave in your discussion for opposing the bill were you didn't like some of the language that told the BEST board they had to take into consideration where marijuana revenues come from in considering making grants. And then also, in its original form, the bill said that right now the BEST program gets like the first $40 million of some stream of marijuana money. The next $5 million had to be dedicated to technology grants, and that was another concern that the board expressed. So those were the two main reasons I communicated to the sponsor for your opposition. The bill was heavily amended in the House Education Committee, and both of those provisions were taken out of the bill. So in its current form, the bill really doesn't do a ton of things.
So the dark stuff is the stuff that was eliminated?
The dark stuff reflects the amendment that was made in the Education Committee. I think if you don't mind, let me just describe what the bill would do in the format that you have in front of it, which is to expand the current statutory definition of technology for the BEST program to be inclusive of hardware devices or equipment. So that's one thing it does, is expand the existing definition. It specifically grants the BEST board the authority to give grants for this type of technology. They're not required to. There's no set aside. The BEST board could give none of those grants. They simply have the ability to do so if they approve.
And they're not tied to a building grant, right?
They do not have to be.
They're unique grants.
Correct. Correct. There is existing requirements on the BEST board to notify school districts of, you know, that this grant program is out there. So when they do that, they have to also tell them that technology grants are part of it. And then finally, there's existing requirements that the BEST board report to the legislature on all the grants that they approve. And so this adds technology grants into that existing reporting structure.
So does it feel as though this $5 million should have gone to buildings and is going to technology instead?
So the $5 million, that component is completely stricken from the bill. Sorry.
Struck.
Thank you. Embarrassing. I should know that. So all it does is say within whatever existing appropriations the BEST board has under, you know, current or in the future, now it can do technology grants alongside the other grants it already has the ability to do.
Thank you. Comments? Colleagues?
No, a comment.
Board Member Goff?
This is BEST-related legislation is the only area I can think of where the use of the term the board can be, it's probably only from our perspective, but there are occasional times when that suggestion could be passed along to the bill writers, right? Is it every now and then put in BEST along with that, or the construction, what's the full title of their board name? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think the reason they don't do that, because this is in the part of statute that affects the BEST board. This is one of the things, hard to read bills sometimes, because they don't give you all the surrounding language that's already in statute. It's hard to read.
Just a thought, that occasionally it maybe would be helpful to insert the term. I agree. I mean, when we get the amendments summaries, if we see those, that's impossible without without having something to ground it in.
Yeah. I requested this version of this bill be produced because I knew that if I handed you the original bill and the amendment, which says things like line 22, strike this word, that's very difficult to interpret. So my intention, I hope it worked, was to give you something that was easier to understand what changes have been made.
Thank you for that.
Board Member McClellan.
I would like to express my appreciation for the sponsors of the bill taking our constructive criticism into account and making changes in the bill. And I'd like to put a motion out on the floor. I move to support House Bill 171082.
Is there a second?
Can I second bills?
When is this going to the House?
This bill is out of the House Education Committee. It is currently awaiting a hearing in the House Appropriations Committee that has not been scheduled. It could be any time in that particular committee, but it's still in the House.
I'll just make a comment for now, which is I keep thinking about what's the problem that we're trying to solve. And this is a real problem. There is a real problem across the state. I am told, but I don't have the evidence, that there are districts that have so little technology that they can barely get through the state assessments. I don't know if that's correct. And what I wish the bill writer could clarify is, do we know what the needs are out there? We know what the needs are for the best grants because we've had an analysis done, right? And we've got, what, $6 billion or whatever. Anyways, a number of folks looked into the building needs, the school needs. We don't have that here. Anecdotally, I hear all sorts of stuff. Every district would actually like to probably have some more machines. I guess you can't call machines.
Well, and I would
devices.
Note, I mean, I think
devices.
You all know this, but the best board, you know, they have a very extensive process that they go through to evaluate all these proposals, but those recommendations actually come up to you all as a state board for formal action. Mm-hmm. So you do have a role in this process.
Right, and my concern is if this $5 million would go to buildings that where the needs are already identified, and I believe that's been Mr. Durham's concern, then it's a problem. But if it doesn't go anywhere, I do hope, and I'm going to look into it a little bit, that there's somebody out there who has been looking at, especially the rural districts, where there are acute technology needs. And I'm not talking about broadband. I'm talking about what they're describing here, which is the hardware. So that puts me in an uncomfortable position. I have a feeling we should monitor this, guys.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you've got a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So does somebody want to propose a monitor?
I will.
Okay.
Just to satisfy my legislative.
Okay. So we've got a motion to monitor this bill. And I think maybe if there's a way, Ms. Mellow, that you can get some information from the bill sponsor or anyone else as to where does that $5 million, whoops. Ms.
Thank
M,
you.
Please.
Yes, thank you. $5 million set aside for this has been also struck from the bill language. So it basically what this does is currently there is language in the statutes that allow for technology grants, and this expands that definition of the technology to include classroom technology. So there's already language that allows it for broadband use.
In this bill?
In the current existing statutes. Last year there was a bill.
The best?
Yes.
Statutes, okay.
Yeah. That there was a bill that expanded the ability to grant it moved up that priority for technology. And so this expanded that definition of technology to include classroom devices and educational type technology and not just broadband expansion and, you know,
wires
the lines and wires and all of that kind of thing. But the $5 million was taken out of this language this year, too.
Yeah, so there's
I don't know what we have left.
Yeah.
Just whatever money's in the fund.
Right.
Can be used for this, doesn't have to be.
For devices.
Yeah, but doesn't have to be.
May I ask a question of Ms. Rankin? Ms. Rankin, you serve a population, I think, that this bill may be talking about, where technology is an issue. Can you tell us or maybe share with us if that is indeed the case?
Is that Val talking?
Yes. Yes, this is Val.
That was an interesting question, and I was thinking about it while other people were talking. I do hear people, and this is anecdotal, in my district, superintendents, teachers, talking about the lack of access to the hardware, yet when I've been touring the schools, there will be computer labs that are sitting unused. And that's very problematic for me. I would think if there was this much of a demand, teachers would have checked out and had their classes go in there every day, every hour, to get full understanding of not only the hardware, the software. Mm-hmm. This bill, as it relates to this bill, this is problematic to me, because if there's a lot of amendments, sometimes you need to go back and rewrite a very clear, succinct bill. And this seems to be a problem here. Also, the lack of bipartisan support on the top of the bill, that's interesting to me. And I have to concur, and I think it was Angelica that said we should monitor it. And if there is if someone has said we need to support this, I would be against that. I am on the side of monitoring this bill, because I think it's going to have a lot more questions come up than even we've brought up today.
Well, at this point, the motion on the table is to monitor.
We do need a second.
Oh, okay.
Val seconded.
I'll second that. Yeah.
Board Member McClellan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a procedural question as the newest board member. Because we previously had a successful motion to formally oppose this bill, is a new motion, independent of that old motion, enough to nullify the old one? And also, must it be made by someone who voted in the majority? And I realize that's a moot point this time, because with the exception of our chairwoman, I think all of us voted with the majority to oppose this bill last time. But do I understand correctly that, as with any reconsideration, it would be a requirement that the motion be made by someone who voted with the majority on the prior vote?
What I can speak to is past practice, and past practice is that this is essentially, it's not, basically we take a new position, right? The board always has the ability to reconsider its position, particularly if a bill changes. So, and I understand that's not a Roberts Rule of Order answer to your question. I will tell you the vote to oppose this bill was unanimous amongst the seven of you.
It was?
According to my records, it was, and I apologize if I have that wrong.
Yeah, I thought I voted for it.
I'm terribly sorry. Had that mistake.
It's okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thanks. Ms. Goff.
I'd just like to say that, in a way, it's semi-statutory, in that it's semi-state board statutes, as in our policies and procedures. And all of that is outlined and spelled out pretty clearly in the legislative operating procedures of the state board. It talks about why that can happen, some rationale for it, but basically it lines out what we can do. We are free to watch bills, which we do anyway, and change positions whenever we see fit.
And this is a new bill, and it doesn't really...
Well, a particular bill doesn't have anything to do with it. It outlines our practices, how we go about taking positions and communicating about legislation and so forth. It's all in there. I would say, just as a comment, I think jumping from an opposed position, I don't want to be logical about this, but it is logical. It's like, you know, to move from opposed to support, while the bill is still in process, it hasn't gone through both houses yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's better to be watchful we keep watching, we keep paying attention. Amendments do happen frequently between the time we say something and it ends up in the final stage. So Monitor is a logical, smart, intelligent way to go at this point.
Can we call the vote?
Board Member Durham is excused. Board Member Flores?
Yes.
Board Member Goff?
Yes.
Board Member Masnek is excused. Board Member McClellan?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
I'm sorry, it wasn't real clear to me. Did Board Member Goff say no?
She said yes.
I said yes, Monitor.
To Monitor.
Oh, okay. I've got it. Then yes. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you. Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Nell.
Thank you all. In closing, I will let you know that I have, I'm working on distributing your legislative priorities. In order to call more attention to them, I've decided to do it on an individual basis with members of the House and Senate Education
That's
Committee.
Smart.
And so I'm about halfway through that process.
I would just like to add that I wrote a letter kind of suggesting that we the board, members other than those appointed Republican and Democratic members, that we, the other board, the other members, be able to attend the meetings on a weekly basis during the time the legislature is in season. And this is the bill where Ms. Mello comes to the group and it discusses the bills with those two board members. And I'd like to have it open as it has been for the past 2 years, where it has been very, it's very instructional. And I am one who likes to hear how other people think about this bill, especially other board members think about the bills.
Well, and I agree
to make decisions.
I agree with that. And today was an example of a situation where we talk about that and we see how other board members think about a bill. And so for that reason, I would like to maintain what we do now, is to let our two legislative liaisons continue their work, make their recommendations when they want to, but that we have deeper conversations like we did today when we are all together, rather than just having yet another meeting, because there are board members who cannot attend that extra one. And it would be unfair then. So this, every 2 weeks we will have a board member. We're going to probably ask more of Ms. Mello and staff to help us understand exactly what the consequences of some of the bills might be, either to the department or to school districts. So I agree with you that we need to go into greater depth than we did at the last board meeting, where you felt afterwards that you hadn't really had enough time to process it, and I'm not sure whether you were comfortable with it either as a newbie, because you had a lot of concerns. And so I am going to try to allow more time at our board meetings when we get ready to vote to make that decision at that time, but to continue what board members have done this time.
Well,
because that becomes a closed meeting. It's not a meeting that is recorded. And so that I'm not comfortable with doing it that way. I want to, as you mentioned in your letter, you're looking for transparency. If we're going to have transparency, then we want to have it where we can all be here, all discuss it. I agree with you that we probably need deeper discussion and some more help sometimes from both Ms. Mello and from staff.
Okay, then
like today.
I think that it would be opening up more work for Ms. Mello, because I'd like to then get Ms. Mello's telephone number and really discuss it with her, discuss these bills before we even talk about it. I think that the past 2 years, it has worked well when we come in and when those bills are discussed a couple of times.
Ms. Mello, are you willing to interact one-on-one with us?
In fact, that was going to be my closing comment. I work for all of you, and you are all always welcome to email me any questions you have, to call me. I'm more than happy to, to get you the information you need and want in order to to consider the bills that come before you for decision. Absolutely.
Okay. So let's do that.
Well, can we vote on that?
No.
No. It's not a voting item.
I believe it's the discretion of the chair to choose the legislative liaisons, which is what we did.
Aye. Ms. Goff. Board Member Goff.
I'm going to bring them up again. The structure of our meetings, whatever level we're doing it at, is when it comes to legislation, is outlined in our adopted procedures. So if there should be a call for and a need for just review of those, which technically we should have been doing that. We should have done that a while ago. Then the chair would has the prerogative of calling that and setting a time and place for that. That meeting will also be a public meeting. So if that is the desire of the chair to pursue the thought of that, then it's one way to go about it. I would agree that the chair has the prerogative at the present time to outline what the procedure is going to be for the current session. That's my contribution. I'm happy to talk about it. I think we all would be in the way that we have outlined for ourselves to do our governance.
Well, that sounds like doublespeak.
Val, we can't all come to weekly meetings.
I know you can't. And not everybody has to come.
But we end up coming to them. If it's one, then it's all. We are a board. We are not individuals out doing individual stuff.
Yes, and so in this particular, some of us may need a little bit more help than others. And when we hear that it's being discussed, and we usually more discussion and more time means more understanding. So
you have staff to go to and you have Ms. Mellow to go to. And as long, I think it is really important that we get the bills to you a couple of days beforehand so that you have time to read them and ask your questions.
Ask questions.
And I was gonna make sure you all had my card, so this has my cell number and my email on it in case that.
Great idea.
Well, in case you
I'm
don't
sorry
have
that we're not continuing as we have been in the past 2 years. I'm sorry that our new chair.
It probably
does not
didn't work for everyone.
It worked for me.
I realize that. Pass them out.
Okay.
And I have a question for you, one-on-one.
Okay.
Oh, meeting's adjourned.